I'm pleased to welcome founder and director of Enact Arts, Vinita Sudbelani, back to KALW's Open Air. She's directing a play she adapted from a novel by A.J. Chowdhury called The Case of the Vanishing Firefish. It's a fantasy fiction voyage for kids and parents that is inspired by both Harry Potter and The Da Vinci Code. It's at the Cubberly Theater in Palo Alto. Welcome back to Open Air, Vinita.
Thank you. It's always such a pleasure to be here.
Well, so this play kind of combines the modern day world, fantasy, and a morality play all in one. Tell us about this origin novel of AJ's.
Okay. So AJ is a tech entrepreneur, lives in London, has two daughters, and every night putting them to bed, he would make up this fantastical tale, which got more and more interesting every night as he told it. And then eventually it got so fun that he turned it into a novel. And essentially it's the story. It all starts because the bioluminescent phytoplankton in the ocean are dying. And the queen of the sea knows that if the phytoplankton die, then the fish will die, and then the animals will die, and then we will die. So it's a really serious environmental issue. And so she goes off to see who is the best person to help her solve this mystery of why the phytoplankton are disappearing. And the person she enlists to help her in this mega problem is this young 10-year-old girl called Aisha, who's very intrepid, very bold, and her favorite person in the whole world is Hermione. She keeps asking herself, where's the adventure? What would Hermione do? So she gets sent by Queen Shekinah on this adventure to find out why the phytoplankton are disappearing. And she goes first to talk to Stephen Hawking because there's some correlation between astrophysics and bioluminescent phytoplankton. And then they need to go to Spain and Barcelona to visit Gaudi's Casa Batlló because there are some clues that Gaudi has embedded in his architecture. And then eventually she finds that science is not enough. And then some of the clues really rest with what is the meaning of life. And so they have to whiz off to Dharamshala in India to meet the Dalai Lama, who tells them where the answer actually lies. So it's a really fun adventure. She has two assistants in this adventure. One is a snarky snail who really talks a lot and loves chocolate, given to her by Queen Shekinah as her sidekick. And one is a reluctant assistant, her 16-year-old cousin Xander, who lives in Rome and loves to play the air guitar and thinks she's going to really get into serious trouble if he doesn't tag along with her. Of course, does not take to the snarky snail, but the snarky snail ends up being the savior of the day every time they run into trouble. So it's a really interesting dynamic, and that's really what the story is about.
Well, naturally, the transition from novel to play must involve some choices of what to include and what to exclude. What was that process like?
So when I read the novel, these characters were just all dancing off the pages, and I said, oh, I really want to do this in three-dimensional. But it's very challenging because there are shapeshifters and, you know, they stop in cafes and then they have this wild bus ride up to Dharamshala where they almost fall off a cliff. And you can't really do all of that in a play. So the choices were difficult. I tried to keep to the spirit of the book and the spirit of the characters. But what was hugely, hugely helpful was that we live in an era of technology. And what I can't have actors do, I can have projections do in terms of animation.
You mentioned how key that is to this particular production. Tell us about David Murakami's work.
Yeah, so this is the fourth play that David and I are doing together. And as I give the interview, he's setting up the projections back in the theater. The projections veer between realistic, you know, they're in a hotel, resort hotel in Rimini in Italy when the adventure starts. And so you see them in the hotel and Aisha's a little bored and looking for adventure. So there is that part. And then there is all the stuff that happens undersea with all the sea creatures. There is this octopus who's very French and really does not like the snarky snail at all. And then there are tuna fish who were actually...
He doesn't turn them into escargot, does he?
He would if he had a chance. And then, of course, you know, Queen Shekinah herself, she's a fantastical creature, and she is not Poseidon. She's more of a queen mother, very motherly. And so all these characters, and then they get catapulted into another galaxy through a wormhole. And how do you do that on stage? You know, God bless projections and God bless technology, because we take the viewer in with us in large screen.
Fantastic and fantastical at the same time. So this is also a fundraiser, isn't it?
Yes, we are. Well, we run a program called Theater for a Cause, where we pick certain plays and causes that come to us for awareness or fundraising. We kind of match them with the theme of the play. And this play really is a play for children, about children, and involves a lot of math and science. And so we wanted to support nonprofits that deal with that subject. So there's two organizations that we're fundraising for. One is High Tech High Heels, which is right here in the Bay Area. And basically, these are women in technology who are supporting programs in middle school, after-school programs that help middle school girls, especially, retain their interest in science and develop their interest in science with the ultimate goal of greater college enrollment in science-related fields as far, you know, for women.
Mm-hmm. These particular performances will be tomorrow, Friday, January 31st at 7 p.m., Saturday at 2 and 6 p.m., and this Sunday at 3 p.m. The Cupperleigh Theater, I'm not familiar with the Cupperleigh Theater. Tell us about
it's
space.
A charming little theater in the heart of Palo Alto. It's a community theater and is surrounded by music rooms and, you know, a lot of other classes going on, really easily accessible. And in terms of the play is mostly acted by children. And so it's a non-threatening, very welcoming space and really easy to get to if you want to come see the play.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's tell us a little bit about the other characters. There's a father and a mother figure that are kind of reverse rolled.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing about the play and the reason why I'm doing this play is it pushes a lot of buttons for me. There's the whole gender issue. It's really hard to find children's plays where the central character is female. The central character is an ethnic minority, you know, Indian in this case. It's very science and math oriented. But that's not where it kind of ends. For example, the mom and dad, as you asked, they're an interesting couple. They were both hedge fund managers, both making a lot of money in London. And then dad decided to be the stay-at-home dad and let mom continue working. So dad takes his stay-at-homeness very seriously. He watches The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to get tips on how to be a real good house husband. He regularly goes for feng shui classes and massages and But, you know, he doesn't shy away from hiring a nanny for his daughter while he's doing all of this. So,
and this is all also involved in the original novel.
Yes, yes. We haven't taken away from... The characters of Mom and Dad are much more developed in the novel. We didn't really have time to explore that relationship, though Aisha does say that they need a little more romance in their lives than they're currently getting. Mm-hmm. So, yes, all from the novel.
Tell us a little bit more about the larger mission statement of Enact.
So Enact has a mission to do a couple of things. One is to tell stories that are global, that are completely universal in their appeal. We pick stories that are rooted in South Asian narrative, but, you know, could be enjoyed by pretty much anybody. So universal appeal. For example, we did a play about Noor Inayat Khan, who was this Indian Muslim girl living in Paris when World War II broke out, and she managed to escape the German occupation of Paris to London and became one of the Allied command's first radio spies. And then she was embedded back in the French resistance. And Churchill, after her death in the concentration camp, she was captured by the Germans. He said that she had single-handedly shortened the course of the war by 3 months. Now, this is the story of an Indian girl living in Paris. She's Muslim. Nobody knows the story, though she was given a George Cross and the Croix de Rouge, both by France and by England.
Wow.
So that's the kind of stories we like to tell, stories that inspire, stories that are little known but need to be known, and stories that have a global appeal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first part of the mission. The second part of the mission really is helping, committing to developing talent in the performing arts in the Bay Area. We have an ACT Academy. We run theater classes for kids, for adults. We train all of our arts management staff. You know, they work with us for a few years, and then they go out and they get better jobs with bigger companies. We're just focused on minorities, getting all the skills that they need to fight to get the roles in professional theater and film further down the road. So we're in an incubator, a talent development platform in that sense.
Mm, fantastic. Follow the link at our website to Enact to learn more about them. The Case of the Vanishing Firefish is Friday at 7, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday's performance is at 2 and 6 p.m., Sunday's performance at 3 p.m. at the Cubberley Theater in Palo Alto. Tell us about the next production that Enact will be bringing us.
The next production is as different as it could possibly be from this one. It's very adult. It's a play called A Touch of Brightness. It's the story of prostitution and sexual trafficking in India. It's a play that was written in 1963, actually, the year that I was born, and was supposed to make its debut at the Royal National Theatre in London, and was promptly banned by the Indian government, and a band of pro bono lawyers took 7 years to repeal that ban. And the reason it was banned was because it talked about red light districts, you know, prostitution areas in the city of Bombay. So the play had more drama surrounding it than the play itself. Eventually, it was picked up by Judi Dench and made into a BBC play, and then it had a long run. It actually had a 50th anniversary run not too long ago. And we, I think it's the moment to talk about awareness of sexual trafficking and what we, as average, you know, people on the street can do in helping break up sexual trafficking rings and being more aware of trading in flesh.
Well, thank you for that good work. Again, you can learn more at Enact, ENACTE.org. Follow the link next to this file at Open Air here on KLW. Let's go out with some of the original music by Randy Armstrong that is in The Case of the Vanishing Firefish. Tell us a little bit about Randy.
Randy, he lives in Boston. He teaches at several schools and universities. He plays 123 instruments. He's a world ethnomusicologist. This is his fifth production composing for us, and he can compose anything from Buddhist chants to marimba music to pretty much anything in the world. But what you're going to listen to right now is our opening number, The Song of the Sea, which Shakina sings to tell everybody in the world that Aisha is coming to save them.
Vanita, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Music from The Case of the Vanishing Firefish at the Cubberley Theater this weekend. Enact.org for more information.
Bye.